Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. We thank you for joining us, and we're recording the day after the president gave his State of the Union speech, so that may be a heavy topic for us. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Pat Park.
And again, welcome. So we do want to head off to the speech. What part of the speech do we want to start with? Do we want to start with Al Green?
He was abruptly asked to leave.
And why?
Because he was totally disruptive. He was waving his cane around. He was just being overly obnoxious.
And that was all set up. He knew what he was going to do when he went in, and there was no question about it. It wasn't something that he spontaneously responded to. That was set in his mind. I'm going to go in and do this, regardless of what Trump said. So it had nothing to do with anything provocative that President Trump said.
As was shown also by the ping pong paddles that they had written up that, what was it?
Musk
steals and
what?
False. They had false was on
Musk
false.
Steals?
Musk steals.
What has he stolen? Not a darn thing.
Not a darn thing, no.
That, you know, they're lucky they're in Congress or he'd sue them.
Does what they did, what Al Green did and his stupid little signs, is there a segment of the American voter that supports this?
Oh, yeah, the crazies that get out there and have blue hair and chant and sing those old Union songs, those people support that.
Yeah, I think they reported the other day in a poll that I think it's like 36% of the people think that Biden did a better job than Trump did. So, you know, there's a cadre of people that, regardless of what happens, they're just anti-Trump, but it goes beyond that. They're anti-America. They are anti the values and standards that made this country great. And they are socialists, communists, and, you know, whether they know that or whatever, but their beliefs and what they want to do would lead us in leading us in that direction if we can get their way.
To me, because I watched the speech, the saddest moment of the speech, and I'm going to read part of the speech. This, to me, was so sad. This is my fifth such speech to Congress, and once again, I look at the Democrats in front of me, and I realize there is nothing I can say to make them happy or to make them stand or smile or applaud. Nothing I can do. I could find a cure to the most devastating disease, a disease that would wipe out entire nations, or announce the answers to the greatest economy in history, or the stoppage of crime to the lowest levels ever recorded. And these people sitting here, right here, will not clap, will not stand, and certainly will not cheer for these astronomical achievements. They won't do it no matter what. Five times I've been up here. It's very sad, and it just shouldn't be that way.
And I think that reflects what I just said about the fact there's a cadre of these people in the Democrat Party. They're not looking at any success or give the president any credit for anything he's doing. They just want their socialist agenda. They want women having to play against men in sports. They want transgenderism. They want all big government. And that's all they see. And yeah, it was just like you said, when I looked at the shot of the Democrats that they took, and they didn't take many of them, but there was a few. And I looked at like a group of those Democrats sitting there, like you said, with the long looks, scowls on their faces. And I immediately thought, these people are representing our country. They're sitting in the seats that people who created this country, the founding fathers and so on, people whose judgment and knowledge and so on could be relied upon. And you take a cross section of these people, I looked at it and said, I don't want those people making decisions about my life.
And especially if I had to sit there and see that person was actually representing my district, I think I would be very, very
Well, my feeling on what he said is it's very hard to push a car forward. Then there are people in front of the car trying to push it backwards. And we need to get together and move forward. And no matter how good it is or how well something works, it's becoming very obvious that there are certain people in our Congress that are not going to help move the country forward.
Now let's go on to what was said in the
line of the night.
The line of the night.
We didn't need a bill to close the border. We just needed a new president.
Yeah, that was great.
And
it's so true, because Biden the whole time was saying, I can't do anything. This is out of my control. We need more legislation. It's the Congress's fault. They don't do that. Trump gets in. And within 2 weeks, the border crisis has been reduced to not only very manageable, lowest in, 25, 30 years or something.
Yeah.
They haven't had that many. And they're still pushing it. He wants to get to zero.
Yes.
As an aside, now in talking about that accomplishment, we no longer are hearing about, now whether it's happening or not, we no longer are hearing about the inner city crime and the taking over of hotels or the taking over I don't remember the name of the...
It was an apartment building.
The apartment building.
In Aurora.
We don't hear that right now. And so that's also an attitude change, I think.
Yes. Well, my favorite statement of the night was, our message to every child in America is that you are perfect exactly the way God made you. I think teenagers, sure, particularly, and adolescents need to hear that.
Yes, that was wonderful. That was really a great message.
They need to know that it's okay to be going through adolescent angst and to not know who you are and all that stuff, that everybody goes through that. And
well, I went through it, and I never once questioned, why am I a girl? I mean, stupid.
I was a tomboy. Had I grown up in today's world, Lord knows what somebody would have done to me. It's a little scary. And it was interesting, the Democrat women showed up in pink, supposedly to show their support for women, the day after the Democrats in the Senate voted not to protect women from competing against men in sports.
You know, one of the things about the Trump speech last night that impressed me was his courage and his willingness to take on issues that need to be addressed. I've never seen that from any other Republican president. Now, Reagan was in that direction, too. Reagan came out with some good things. He did make a mistake going along with giving amnesty to all those illegals that he got talked in. He didn't want to do it, but he allowed himself. But anyway, Trump's whole attitude and his approach shows his courage and his willingness to stand up, to assert himself, and not beat around the bush. If he thinks something's wrong, he's going to come out and say it's like the DEI stuff. He came out and said any public institution that's getting federal money that continues this will have their money cut off. And there's things that he's willing to do. And I think part of it is the fact that he knows this is his last term.
He's a lame duck.
And the other thing is he's never been a politician. He does what he says. And so refreshing. It's so refreshing because I don't remember George Bush or both of the Bushes being that way. They were kind of wishy-washy.
Yeah,
wishy-washy.
No new taxes. Remember Bush Sr.? No new taxes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's not... President Trump is not saying things to be liked. He's saying things to get things done. Yeah.
And one of his... I love the comment. Over 130,000 people, according to the Social Security database, are age 160 years old. And then he turned around to Bobby Kennedy and said, we have a healthier country than I thought, Bobby.
Well, the problem with that is... one of the articles I read said the Social Security Administration generated those numbers, those Social Security numbers, but I haven't seen any proof that we're actually paying them.
Mm.
Yeah, and data-wise, it's just it's a field in their database.
Right.
That the field, it's a binary field. Are you dead? Yes or no? Okay.
Right.
And these are not flagged.
Yeah, they don't put that in their database, whether you're dead. but the point is, I haven't seen any proof.
No.
So you can't claim, well, we're paying all this money out on Social Security. And it's curious to me, if you could find the numbers in the database, why can't you find whether or not they're being paid? I don't understand that.
And then I think, regardless, let's assume, obviously, these are mistakes somewhere along the line. There aren't these people at all. But the point is, from my perspective, if you have an agency that's operating with that such a glaring error, it's a system that's so ineffective and inaccurate, how are they handling the actual discharging of the money, paying of the money? They could be just as inaccurate there.
Have they been audited anywhere along the line?
Well, the U.S.
No.
Treasury has never said no.
That's right.
And they write all the checks.
The other part of this, too, is they may not be paying these people. We have no proof that they are. But this certainly opens the door to some smart person coming in there and committing fraud.
Yeah, we haven't, and they haven't proven that they aren't paying them yet either.
That's true.
We have.
No, and there's all sorts of roadblocks that are being put in the way to say, no, you can't see this information.
Well, there's other agencies that in the past have asked Social Security to tell them whether or not Joe Blow is dead so they can cut off whatever benefit it is that they're administering. And the Social Security has routinely said, no, we're not going to tell you that. Well, now we know why, because they don't have it in their database.
And way back, I know when we started doing some genealogy, well, in the midst of doing some genealogy work, there used to be SSDI, Social Security Death Index, which was the index of all the people and the day that they passed away. But that was supposedly giving away too much information, because then people could say, oh, I'm going to go and pretend that I'm then. Well, again, anybody could have collected that information and said, no, that Social Security number is you know, no longer valid. So where do we go from here if we don't have the ability to prove that people have passed on? We don't have that ability right now. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is a CCTA Wake Up Call show. Thank you for listening and staying with us.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, just people in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back, and again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. And Pat, you wanted to take us off to a reliable source.
Okay, now, full confession, I did not watch the rebuttal by Alyssa Slotkin. Okay, I just knew it would make me mad, and it was bedtime, and I didn't want to go to bed mad. But this morning, I found this article. Somebody call 911. Larry the Cable Guy obliterates Alyssa Slotkin's anti-Doge desperation. And apparently, she said she denounced Musk and his gang of 20-year-olds claiming they're poking through your tax returns. And Larry's response to that was, so 20-year-olds litter the deck of battleships, 20-year-olds work on submarines, 20-year-olds are in the Army and Marines, but Slotkin thinks they're too stupid to hunt for waste and fraud in government. Get out of here with your BS. The dumb ones are the ones that can't balance the country's checkbook. Meaning you, Alyssa.
Meaning you, Alyssa,
that's
yes.
That's who we're talking about right there. Larry the Cable. You know, when you can't even defend yourself against Larry the Cable Guy,
you're in trouble.
you're in trouble.
Your credibility.
You're dragging the bottom.
You know, this show, when you listen to like her response, and I will admit I didn't listen to it, but I couldn't imagine her coming up with anything. It's all, I'm sure it was, just attacking Trump and all that stuff. Because the Democrats don't have any legitimate issues anymore.
Well,
and
you know,
their only issue is to attack Trump wherever they can, because the election showed that what Trump, all his speeches and what he promised to do was exactly what the people wanted. The majority of the people in this country.
Yeah.
In an overwhelming way. No Republican's been that successful since Reagan.
Well, you know, as we said, CNN, not necessarily the most reliable Republican source, but CNN did a poll of the favorable rating of his speech. And I guess, what was the
76%.
76%. And where would they go to get their sampling of people?
Yeah.
From their audience?
Well, Trump mentioned it in his speech that common sense is back, and that his positions are based on common sense. And I've seen a lot of pundits comment on what's going on in the Democrat resistance as 80-20 issues. The transgenders in women's sports is an 80-20 issue. 80% of Americans support no men in women's sports, and the Democrats are defending the 20%. And that there's a lot of the 80-20 issues, and they've been boxed in to defend the 20%.
So they're always looking out for the minority.
Yeah, so they're not taking any common sense positions. This is not going to bode well for them.
Hooray.
Well, but wait a minute.
Wait a minute. Let me finish. What concerned me, I was reading the articles going up to the speech, and the Democrats had been trading. This is how desperate and puerile they are, if I may use that word. They were talking about bringing eggs to the hearing, bringing noisemakers, funny clappy hands, heckling.
Yeah.
Now I know someone else said that the threat was they were all going to bring these pocket-sized copies of the Constitution, but the immediate feedback would have been, have you ever read it?
Yeah. No, I didn't read that one. I didn't see that one. They were also going to bring a federal employee who had been fired.
Yeah.
With them. I didn't see any of those. So I guess they got confused. They thought they were in the British Parliament. But
well,
we don't conduct ourselves that way here.
Well, the other thing, too, you talk about 80-20 issues. In Massachusetts, you're still going to elect Democrats, even if the issues are 80-20. In California, you're still going to elect Democrats, even though the issues are 80-20. New York, Connecticut, you know, I don't know that the real idiots, if I may use that word, that support things that are total minority positions are even in any danger of having of being unelected.
Well, as the president stated in the speech last night, he took all of the purple states. All of the purple states went to the president in the Electoral College. So in the 80-20 rule, the states that they're going to hang on to are the ones that are
the 20%.
The 20% of the definite blue states, whether they're going broke or not, they're going to hang. What was the? I'm trying to think of if we hang together.
We're all hang together or we'll all hang separately.
Well, they're in the
in
separate.
Well, if they go broke, they can't expect Trump to bail them out.
No. Along the lines of the speech, there was a moment where a 13-year-old child, young man, with cancer was inducted into or was sworn into the Secret Service or whatever.
He was he was given a badge.
Yeah. Okay.
An ID.
I just want to share a post on Twitter or X by the United Cajun Navy, which says, if anyone knows how to get in touch with Officer Special Agent DJ Daniel, we'd love to swear him in as an honorary member of the United Cajun Navy. I think that's adorable.
That was adorable when the little guy put his arms around the neck of the Social Security dude.
Oh, the Secret Service dude.
Yeah. That was so cute.
You know, and that was the thing about the speech, too. It wasn't just the content of what Trump was saying, but the fact that he would identify and he would actually recognize the people in the audience that have been affected by a lot of these policies, like the lady that got spiked with the volleyball in the face and had brain damage, the parent, the mother and sister of Lake and Riley, who was killed by that illegal then in Georgia, and several other of the people that he would single out. And it shows, to me, it shows the empathy that Donald Trump has for the people. It's not a facade in his part. He actually cares about the people.
Like the individuals.
The individuals. Like he mentioned that teacher that he was able to get out of Russia. And he went back to the fact that at the rally he was had in Butler, where he was actually shot, his mother, who was 95 years old, came up to him and asked him if he could do something about getting her son out. And even though he went through all that trauma, he followed up on that. And that shows a sensitivity and a caring about people that you rarely see legitimately with politicians. They might go kiss a baby, or they might pretend to do all this stuff, or like Biden sniffing some young girl's hair or something. With Trump, it's legitimate. He cares about these people.
Have you heard the latest from James Carville about Trump? He's a fat slob. He's 80 years old. He doesn't sleep. He's got a bruise on his hand that shows he has syphilis.
and James Carville is a credible source, right?
That's who the Democrats listen to.
I don't know why they put this clown on the air. I mean, you even see it on like Newsmax and Fox News, James Carville. Who wants to listen to that moron? I don't.
I don't either.
Well, you know, again, to your point, Alan, that he does not consider this a caste society with various classes of people.
Right.
He understands that the little guy there is just as important as somebody else. And if that little guy has a problem, we have a problem.
Yeah, it's like when Trump contacted the families of all the 13 service members that were killed in that that terrible exit out of Afghanistan that Biden arranged. What did Biden do when the caskets came home? He's looking at his watch.
Yeah. Like, can we live this long?
And Trump, he contacted the families, but he had no responsibility to do it. He wasn't president at the time. It's just that he does have that empathy and caring for people that's just great to see.
And on that note, the guy that instigated that bomb has been taken into U.S. custody.
Yes.
Yay.
Yes, yes.
Justice is swift and terrible, as he will find out in the Trump USA.
In the Trump USA or the Trump Guantanamo, one or the other.
Yeah,
yes.
Wow.
You know, I hope that somebody like that is actually convicted and executed. I did notice that Trump did say in a speech last night that he had issued a presidential order directive about anyone who kills a law enforcement officer will be mandatorily given the death penalty.
Well, that's only in a federal case.
Well, I know, but the point is he's doing what he can.
Right.
And that's what needs to be done. This stuff where it takes years and years and years for them to get around to dealing out the punishment, the judicial system is too slow and too ineffective, in my opinion. The punishments don't come quickly enough after the crime.
There were a couple of other things in the speech that I was glad to hear. One was the gigantic natural gas pipeline that's already been permitted.
Yes.
And I didn't even know he was working on it. It's already been permitted.
And supported by a number of other countries, too.
Yes. And the Office of Shipbuilding.
The Office of Shipbuilding, yes. Bring that back to the United States.
Right. Because China has more ships than we do.
Yeah, and they have, I reported that in an article I wrote just recently. China has like 24 shipbuilding facilities, and we have two. And we now, of course, but at least, you know, it's so many things that President Trump is aware of and trying to do simultaneously. It's mind-boggling.
At least the China ships don't run into people.
And we
talking about the aircraft carrier that just ran into that ship. I saw a picture of the damage. It wasn't pretty.
No, it was not pretty. It was not pretty at all.
No.
But the shipbuilding, yes, needs to come back to the United States, needs to employ a number of steel workers. Again, needs to be made with U.S. steel. Steel that's actually
he's
made in
like
the United
Fox.
States.
Yeah.
So we're in that situation where he, like you said, Alan, he's doing so much, pushing in so many directions at the same time. Panama Canal, as you also said, what was the other one?
Greenland.
Greenland, yes.
Greenland.
Yes,
he hasn't given up. Yay.
Has not given up. And Greenland themselves has not given up. They're apparently very, very favor of this.
If they vote to join us. We'll see what happens.
And see what happens. Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters again. Thank you for staying with CCTA Wake Up Call Show.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to the sponsors and supporters. Pat, you have something that you wanted to add.
Yeah, before we move off the speech and the changes to the federal system and whatnot, there was a recent Supreme Court ruling. We've all seen all these district judges issue restraining orders and, in some cases, permanent injunctions, stymieing Trump's changes to the executive branch. And we all assumed that when they got to the Supreme Court would knock them all down. Well, unfortunately, there was a 5-4 ruling on Wednesday morning to uphold the lower court ruling that the government had to pay $2 billion in foreign aid that had been frozen. And I want to know if that $2 billion includes the $15 million for circumcisions in Mozambique.
Now the question...
That's my understanding. That was that whole group of that
USAID
that was going to have to be... But the Supreme Court said, I think the lower court was supposed to sort out which they had to pay. There was some uncertainty about it. But it was just so terrible that they're... Here we go. We've got a president, an administration is trying to save money. They come up with things. Then you have the Supreme Court of all people who block the effort. So here we're suffering with this national debt. It can't continue. And you have a branch of government, the judges, and now even the Supreme Court that is blocking it.
Pat, you would know the answer to this. There's a post on X today from Jonathan Turley, who says that 4 justices are needed to grant review of this decision.
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible that the 4 who did not agree...
Right, that's Alito, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and Clarence Thomas.
So they can ask for a review of this decision.
I hope they do, because this knocks the idea that Trump has the sole control of the executive branch,
right,
crooked, and it also lends credence to the idea to these district judges that they have jurisdiction over the executive branch.
And that's ridiculous. That's against separation of powers.
Yep.
Now, in the $2 billion, and it's just a little bit of change there, in the $2 billion, what are we allowed to do in auditing how it's actually spent? I mean, I know it's allocated to some.
The problem with the judges, the district judge's order, was that he ordered them to pay it by Wednesday midnight, and the problem was the invoices weren't all due immediately. They came in at different times, and there was no way that the government could pay all of them by Wednesday at midnight. So that's what went up on appeal. One of the issues that was raised on appeal, there's no way we could pay all these by midnight. So they still have to wrestle with that issue.
And it was my understanding that the people who brought the suit were these non-government organizations, these people, supposed nonprofits that have been profiting off this process. And it, but it does lead us, I think, into this topic about the national debt. And, you know, Trump's obviously making these efforts and he's being blocked. But I had someone talk with me the other day, and they mentioned that the national debt, there's a couple things that could be done that I don't know whether they whether Trump has these in mind or not, but it was my understanding that the federal government owns a tremendous amount of land, I think it's 600 million acres in the United States.
Western part of the country.
They own most of the western states.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 600 million acres. So this person who talked to me about this suggested that perhaps that land could be sold off and the money obtained from that could go towards paying off the national debt. Now, how much that would amount to, because some of that land might be in areas that there's not much demand for. But it's an interesting possibility, because the federal government, that is an asset. Another thing that I heard was that the GSA, the government something or other,
Services Administration.
Right, government. Thank you, Pat. They identified up to 443 federal buildings that could be sold because they're either not being used at all or they're underused, yeah. Underutilized. So there's another asset that, if that was sold off, and I don't know, again, what kind of demand would be for those buildings.
Including the Pelosi building and the Cheney building.
Yeah. So I read this morning that they've all been put up for sale.
Already.
That's what I read this morning.
Let's hope so. I hope they take the money and apply it to the national debt and not.
It said including the FBI headquarters.
Yeah.
What?
Yes, because he's divesting the FBI from D.C. Most of it's moving to Mississippi, I believe it is.
Alabama?
Okay.
He's sending 500 agents to Huntsville, Alabama. Well, I don't know what's there.
There is an agency of some sort there.
Another thing that I heard, that again getting towards reducing the demand for office space, the IRS is proposing to eliminate 50% of their employees,
well,
of their workforce.
IRS is proposing.
Well,
somebody is.
So whoever's in charge of the IRS, I mean, obviously they're not. You're right.
Somebody says, I've got an idea.
That's an amazing thing. And, you know, I haven't heard Trump come out and say he wants to do a flat tax or something that would eliminate the need for all these IRS employees. But if you cut your workforce, they have 90,000 employees, and they're going to cut it down to 45,000. You've got to have something in mind of what you're going to be doing differently, unless half the workforce hasn't been doing their job or haven't had anything worthwhile to maintain them. But
I read an article about that this morning, and it said if you send in a paper tax return, they manually enter it into the system, which leads to a 43% mistake rate. And that they could save $200 billion a year if they didn't manually enter them. It's like,
well, I like
when you find out how the government works and how old the equipment and the software is, you're wondering how we're creaking along.
Well, you know, you look at the post office, which is not the most efficient branch of private corporation now. It's not a branch of the government anymore.
Right.
But they have all of the OCR stuff. They can read my handwriting. Now, that's an art in itself, to read my handwriting and understand when I address something that it will get to the right spot. So why can't we use that same thing when we're doing the IRS forms?
Right.
Read handwriting properly.
Or just make everybody send it in
electronically. Yeah.
They told everybody, we're not going to send you paper checks anymore. We're not going to send your payments out by check. We're going to send electronic. Everybody had to get a bank account.
You know, I think if you even if you said from the IRS perspective, the IRS is going to open up an office in spring, that you come to the IRS with your paper form and we will coach you how to enter it, and then you're done.
Right.
But you see the difference between the Biden administration and the Trump administration. Biden came up with this proposal. They wanted to hire 85,000 more IRS agents. Trump comes in, he wants to cut 50% of their existing workforce. So the difference between the Socialist Democrats and the Conservative Republicans is so dramatic. It's really mind-boggling.
Well, again, here's another example. They're going to paint over Black Lives Matter Plaza in D.C. and rename it, because the Republicans have threatened Muriel Bowser, the mayor, with loss of funding.
The talking about Doge and the courts, when Elon Musk decided to cancel all the government credit cards, the court said he couldn't do it, so he changed the spending or the limit on the credit cards to a dollar.
Did he really?
Yes.
What a guy.
That's why he's a genius.
Well, he's got such a sense of humor.
In looking back at the IRS employees and what we saw in the past, when you look at full employment from, I'm going to say, from a conservative perspective versus a socialist perspective, if people are employed within the government, which never makes money, government never makes money, you could have full employment when everybody's a government employee, even though you're never going to make a profit. When you look at I'm going to say the more conservative side, when you employ people in industry and you have the turnover of dollars a number of times in a year, I work for a week. I get paid at the end of that week. I go and spend that money so that somebody else can get paid, so they spend that money. And the money turns over 7, 8, 10 times a year, that mm-hmm. same money. Whereas in the federal government, when you pay your taxes, that government may get turned over twice in the year.
Well, it bothers me that so few people pay attention to the burden that illegals have on us because of their remittances back home. They're draining large amounts of money out of our economy that never turn over because they send them to another country.
Yeah, you're right.
They help our economy? No, they do not. They're either a drain on our welfare or they're sending their money back home out of the country. So no, I don't support illegal immigration.
Hear, hear. I don't either.
But.
So you want to talk about the Zelensky?
Let's do that real quickly.
Fiasco.
Yes. The first fiasco, the White House fiasco, first off.
Well, I mean, I'm sure everybody knows about what had happened. And so Zelensky comes in. And interestingly enough, I didn't realize this at first, but he met with a group of Democrats.
Right.
Right before he went to the White House.
Not only Democrats, but also former Obama Secretary of State and State Department officials.
Okay. Because he was, my understanding was, this was just to be like a pro forma, let's sign this deal and let's get on with it.
Have a little press fluffer.
Yeah, but he gets, I don't know what went on at that meeting, but you could just speculate. He was encouraged. Now, whether he had the idea and they just encouraged him to go in there and begin resisting what Trump wants to do.
Yeah, they told him to resist.
Yeah, so that's what happened. And then, of course, Trump and Vance, they stand up for themselves, and they wouldn't take it. So
Zelensky just didn't read the room that Biden was gone.
He read the wrong room. He read the room he was in before.
Yeah.
And he apparently, 3 days before Trump was sworn in, that he had made an agreement with the UK for the use of the mineral rights.
Not to mention the fact that he was campaigning for Kamala.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Yeah, that didn't help.
That did not
but
help.
But the goal was to get Trump to lose his temper and have the American people have sympathy for Zelensky.
Well, he lost his temper.
This was a PR move.
He even pushed him in the shoulder.
Okay.
Stop
folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call Show.
Thank you. What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said East 70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at East 70 Pond, slam bam, full of firearms. New guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at East 70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If East 70 Pond doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, East 70 Pond will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than East 70 Pond. Of course, East 70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. East 70 Pond, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Thank you again for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Let's go back to Zelensky. Mary, you were going to add something.
Yes, there's something on TikTok. I'm sorry.
X.
On X today, saying that he is, Zelensky is now on the record saying he will not negotiate with Russia. Now, I don't know quite how that impacts the mineral deal or anything else, but it doesn't sound promising. We'll have to kind of wait and see what happens.
And as of yesterday, we knew that he was supposed to come back, and he was going to sign on with us, come back.
Well, he sent a really, I'm so sorry letter. Please let me come back. Trump read it in his speech.
Yeah.
So this sounds like I'm not signing, I'm not negotiating, and you can, you know. But Trump, I guess yesterday or the day before, turned off the intel, U.S. intel, to Ukraine. Well, we've been doing all their targeting. So they can have weapons, they can't hit anybody. They can't. They don't know when they're coming, because we're not going to tell them. So we stopped the weapons, now we've stopped the intel, the money's going to stop. And you notice when he left the Oval, he went immediately to the UK, so all the Eurotards could blow smoke up his butt and go, "We love you, we support Ukraine." Yeah, except we're broke.
That's right, we don't have any money.
In fact, the leader of Portugal, I think it was, tweeted out, "We support you, Ukraine," and somebody's response to that tweet was, "You have 34 tanks. How many would you be willing to give Ukraine?"
Well, I think that it's interesting how Trump handled this situation. He immediately, when Zelensky refused to sign what he had previously agreed to do, okay, when Zelensky came to Washington, and it wasn't to negotiate, it was supposedly already settled, and he's the one that backed off and said, "No, I'm not going to sign this." So that obviously upset Trump, and he didn't like that, which I don't blame. I wouldn't like it either. And so what does he do? He threatens to cut off their support from the United States. He puts it on hold. So Zelensky, you know, regardless, and like you say, he went to the UK thinking, "Well, I'm going to get support from Europe." Europe doesn't have the ability to support Ukraine in an effective way. We're the ones only ones that could do it, and even we are having trouble with it. I read the other day, for example, that in 2024 we supplied, I think we're like 200, 250 missiles to Ukraine to deal with these oncoming assaults from Russia. And at the rate we can reproduce them or make them, or replace them, we can only do 12 a year, a whole year. So they are exhausting our supply. The same thing with the artillery shells. We cannot replace them as fast as we're giving them to Ukraine. So what we're doing is we're diminishing our own munition supply, and we're supporting this other country. And I think if Zelensky persists in not being willing to go to a ceasefire first and then negotiate for some sort of armistice deal, like kind of like we did in Korea. We went to a ceasefire, then an armistice. But he's going to find himself out in no man's land because I don't think Trump's going to continue to support it. And he might not have the ability to stop it completely, but he could certainly delay it, and he can make it difficult. So,
as a former intel officer, once you cut off the intel, if they're running the targeting on your weapon systems, you're kind of stuck in the mud.
You know, One of the pictures that we saw just right after the Oval Office incident was the Ukrainian, the ambassador with her head in hands that, oh, you've got to be kidding me type of thing. Alan, we're going to change topics because you wanted to talk about Panama and Greenland, and then you also wanted to make sure we have time about the hurricane support.
Yeah, I just want to follow up what Pat had mentioned about Greenland before, and it's my understanding when Trump was talking in his speech last night that Greenland's still in the picture from his perspective as becoming aligned with the United States. It should be noted that even though Denmark has influence over Greenland, that the Denmark has granted Greenland the ability to select where they want to go. It gave them sovereign independence. So if I think there's only 36,000 citizens or people in Greenland, it's a very small amount. If they decide to align themselves with the United States, Denmark could not stop them, because they gave them that independence 15, 20 years ago, something like that. That's one thing. So it's possible. And the other thing is with the Panama Canal, Trump said last night, we're taking it back.
What he meant by that. Isn't that curious?
Yeah, but the point is, at least he has goals. And he said that Biden sold the canal to the Panamanian, or gave it to him for a dollar.
Carter did that. But since then, they have violated all the conditions.
Yeah. And they did report, too, that BlackRock,
International organization.
They have made an effort to buy both the ports on both sides of the canal. There's one on the Atlantic side, one on the Pacific side, that they would be able to control those ports. Now, whether that's part of the strategy that Trump's going to rely on to get in and let us take over the canal, but I applaud him for doing something about this, because we don't need China controlling the Panama Canal. That would be disastrous to our security, and that's where they've been heading.
Well, we've also seen them controlling our domestic ports with the equipment that they're bringing in.
Yep. So anyway, Trump's on the right track, as usual. We'll see where it goes.
MTG was wearing a hat that said Trump was right about everything. The ones that he got in the Oval Office and he offered them to the press. Yeah. And the guy said no, he didn't want one.
By the way, it was interesting in the speech last night to see him introduce his cabinet one by one throughout the speech, to introduce the people that are highlight them, the folks that he had put in place.
Pete Hegseth is a cutie.
Yes, he is.
Alan, you wanted to talk about hurricane funding.
Yeah, this is something going on at the state level. We can get back to North Carolina for a minute.
And how many years back does this go?
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting issue. The General Assembly has several bills to provide additional funding for what is needed in the western part of the state because of Hurricane Helene. And last week it was announced that there was a Republican House leader by the name of Brendan Jones, who interestingly is from Columbus County. Columbus County, of course, is on the East Coast. Now, all of a sudden, he comes up with this bill that would allocate $217 million that was apparently previously allocated but not spent, perhaps.
In the Cooper administration,
In the Cooper administration. And that money, from what I understand it, from the reporter who reported this for the Carolina Journal, she told me that that money is to go primarily for rebuilding, repairing and rebuilding private homes in the area that was impacted by Hurricane Matthew, which was 2016. Hurricane Florence, which was 2018. So we're 8 years and 6 years down the road. Now we're going to go in and say think that got some serious problems with that. First thing is, if you're living in a home 8 years after hurricane and you haven't repaired your house yet, what are we doing going back 8 years? That's the first thing. The biggest problem I have with it, though, is the people who live in a hurricane-prone area, which eastern North Carolina is. Now, the western part of the state, what happened out there, that's very unusual. Okay, that hasn't happened in most people's lifetime. But here we go again. The federal government, pardon me, the state government in this case, is coming in and acting like an insurance company. If you had, for example, if you had your own insurance, flood insurance, wind and hail damage insurance, and your house gets damaged or you have to replace it or just repair it, you go to your insurance company and you take care of it yourself. But here what we have, and I assume that this is going to go to people who did not have insurance, who elected not to have insurance. When you own something, you make a choice. Do you want insurance to cover it, or do you not want insurance? It's like your automobile. Do you want collision insurance, or do you not? So if you decide not to have a collision insurance, and you go out and you have an accident, and your car is damaged, why should the state step in and pay to repair your car? That's exactly what we're doing. And again, what troubles me is this is all the socialist thinking, is that the government is there to bail people out when you make a bad decision. That's anti this country. This country was built on the idea that every person has freedom, but freedom has consequences.
And
if you make a choice and that choice turns out to be a wrong choice, that's your problem.
You have a freedom to take risks, just as you have freedom to take risks with your money. Do you want to invest it in stocks? Do you want to invest it in bonds? Do you want to invest it in, let's say, just a savings account? I mean, they're different levels of risk.
Yes.
There's a Davy Crockett story when he was in Congress. And there was a fire in a woman's house in Washington, and I guess she was a widow, and she didn't have enough money to repair the house, and Congress voted to allocate money so that she could repair her house. And he went home and was going around campaigning for his next election, and he came up to a farmer, and the farmer said something to the effect of, "You can talk to me, but there's no way I'm voting for you again." And Davy Crockett said, "Why?" And he said, "What business is it of the federal government if the woman had a fire in her house? If people want to make a contribution out of their own pockets, they are welcome to, but that's none of the government's business." Davy Crockett listened to that, decided to learn from it, and never voted for anything like that again. But that's what you're talking
about.
That's
exactly what I'm talking about. And just a quick personal example. My wife and I moved to New Bern. We looked at a house. The house had very little elevation above mean water level. We decided not to buy that house. Fortunately, 4 or 5 years later, fortunately, we didn't buy it. We bought another house. And what happened was, when Hurricane Florence came, that house was flooded. It had 5 feet in the lower level of the house. What happened? You would think, okay, these poor people, they got flooded out. They applied to FEMA. They got a grant, okay? And they had that house raised by FEMA. By FEMA meaning the rest of the taxpayers. So what happens is we take from the tax, some taxpayers, and give it to some other people who chose, they chose not to get flood insurance. And we paid for their repair, their choice. Mm-hmm. That's not the American way. That's the socialist way.
Okay. Folks, we're going to have to wrap the show up. Again, thank you for listening to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. You have a great week.